There's no real participation other than by Zoom, so he'll participate in that. But other than that, we don't have anything going on here that he would be involved with. So to answer your question, he's participating in Zoom.
Okay.
And again, just a reminder on this, it's voluntary. So as we go forward, that's also another part of it.
Do you and the organization, do you all still put trust in Rashid with his decision making and everything?
Well, yeah, listen, as long as he's learned from it, that's it. That's the important part of it. And, you know, we'll take it from there and see.
Chiefs coach Andy Reid yesterday talking about the absence of Rashee Rice from the start of the offseason program. Everyone is absent from the offseason program to start things off in Kansas City. It's virtual. The team told me that over the weekend. I was trying to get a clear answer from someone. It's just so there's a weird vibe. The Chiefs won't say anything about Rashee Rice. They had no statements last week as he was charged with 8 felonies, turned himself in, posted bond, no comment, no comment, no comment. The only thing that anyone had said before Andy Reid spoke yesterday was when team president Mark Donovan 2 weeks ago said, thank God nobody got hurt. It's like, hey, Mark, people got hurt, as we'll talk about in a second. So, no, you're incorrect there. So it's just a weird vibe. And the question becomes, when the players show up, will they let him in the building? 5 years ago, when Tyreek Hill was being investigated, when his son turned up with a broken arm, that all hit right at the time the draft was getting started. The Chiefs and Tyreek Hill decided he'll stay away for the rest of the offseason program. I feel like that needs to happen with Rice. I feel like someone needs to be the grown-up in the room here. SMU suspended Teddy Knox, who was driving the other car in this, without giving it a second thought. Now, he's, as Shireen pointed out on Friday, he falls into the scrub category, so an example gets made of him. But somebody's got to do something about this Rashee Rice thing. 8 felony charges, are you kidding me? And everything's fine? We're not going to do anything about it? Somebody's got to do something about this. You convinced me of that last week, not that you were trying to, but as we talked about it in the aftermath of the charges, it's like, yeah, you can't just act like everything's fine. Something's got to be done.
Yeah. Well, you know, we use it as the prism of like, hey, we're getting to the time of the year where the weather's nice, you know. Young kids drive a car fast and do stuff like that, right? We talked about, hey, the NFL needs to maybe make an example or put their foot down right away to kind of scare that from happening. We'll see where this goes here. But, again, the Zoom thing and all that, it's buying them time, the fact that they don't have to worry about anybody being in the facility and no personal meeting there or a body like Rashee Rice walking in the building and now, ooh, wait, you know, the local news station's got him on camera or whatever else, right? So they're buying time. But I'm in my heart of hearts think that something like what you're saying will happen when it comes time to, wait, the team's now officially getting back together after the draft. We're going to have an OTA or we're going to start the in-person workouts there, right? Whether the team or the NFL have a conversation or they do it themselves, I would be shocked if it doesn't go that way. Like, hey, the NFL hasn't gotten involved yet, but the team goes, hey, Rashee, we're coming back, but, you know, I think it's best if you stay away right now. You're a distraction. I don't think it looks the right way, right? We got to get some things figured out here right now. There's more bad than good than you coming here right now. And I don't know if the NFL, you know, steps in too at that same point, but I will be surprised if that doesn't happen. I'll say that much.
If these charges are still pending when the start of the regular season rolls around, when we're in Kansas City for the first game, whoever they may be playing, we'll find out in a few weeks. I can't imagine Rashee Rice being at the game on the field if he has 8 or more felony charges pending. Remember, he has yet to be charged for leaving the scene of an accident involving injury. They could be adding more to this, all in an effort to kind of overwhelm him and get him to plead guilty. His best play would be to do the best plea deal he possibly can because he's clearly guilty factually, and then you hope for lenience in the sentencing process, and you hope for some sort of resolution by the league that allows you to get back to your career at some point after a minimal suspension. Either way, I'll be very surprised if he's there when we're there for the first game of the regular season, and the Chiefs need to be ready for that. And when you look at the quote that we heard from Andy Reid, Chris,
right,
as long as he's learned from it, that's the important part of it. That tells me they're already predisposed. You know, examples are made of the scrubs. Excuses are made for the stars. That's an excuse. As long as he's learned from it, that's the important part. Well, tell that to the people who got injured. Tell that to the state of Texas that had its laws violated in a very violent and jarring way based on the video we saw. As long as he's learned from it, isn't the only issue. Others need to learn from it, and there needs to be some sort of punishment. That's what the criminal justice system does. You have laws that if you break them, there's punishment. There's a sanction in order to get other people to not do the same thing. Learning your lesson with no punishment isn't enough.
No, usually not. Usually not, especially, you know, with football players who are, you know, the masters at, you know, like I said last week, F it, screw it, blah, 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 I'm invincible, let's do it again, blah, you know, all that thought that goes into the football player's brain that's been in my brain. So, yeah, that's where, you know, usually a, you know, something substantial happening teaches the player that way. The thing I keep coming back to here, you know, the more I think about it too, is the Chiefs are in a precarious situation right now at the wide receiver position, right? They're in a spot here where you almost feel like they're kind of handcuffed, that they're going to have to draft, no pun intended, handcuffed and going to have to, you know, draft a receiver in the first half of the draft, right? I mean, where you look at the Chiefs roster right now, Who are you going to trust, right? Sky Moore hasn't quite worked out to the way they wanted, right? Justin Ross, a guy that they took a chance from out of Clemson, there's been talk about, but what are they going to put him out there and make him a starter all of a sudden and do that? I don't see that. Kadarius Toney and that weird, crazy situation, can they rebuild that and get him confident and get the team back confident in him? Right? There's just not a lot of proven commodities is what I'm saying. Yeah, Justin Watson's there, and we know he's a solid role player type of receiver, right? Valdez Scantling's gone, you know, so that's where I look at it, and I go, I know they signed Hollywood Brown. It's a one-year deal. He certainly will help out and have a role on the football team in some way. We know they know how to use those type of guys, but nonetheless, you know, that's a little dicey when you look at what they got right now on the roster and proven commodities, guys you can trust. Ooh, we know we can depend on him to do this, this, and that. Man, they're in a ooh, I'm not sure about that world right now at that position as far as the Chiefs are concerned.
Valdez Scantling is still available. He could be re-signed. Yep, he had some massive salary under his contract that they wanted to get away from, and no one else has bitten yet on Valdez Scantling. He may be waiting until after the draft to see what kind of an offer he can get. Tyler Boyd is out there. OBJ is available. Jury is out on how much he really has left in the tank. He said at one point back in February that he'd like to play 4 more years. I think 1 or 2 more years is going to be, you know, an impressive feat given all the injuries he's had and given that last year he wasn't tremendous. $15 million base salary and actually earned $1 million in incentives. He got $16 million for his 1 year in Baltimore. He's not going to get anything close to that wherever he goes, but that's an option as well, or the draft, or trade for Brandon Ayuk, which I don't know if the 49ers would trade him to the Chiefs.
Right.
I'd like to think that, you know, the main litmus test is let's not have him in the division or the conference. Let's get him to the AFC, but the idea that we get back to the Super Bowl again, and now we got Brandon Ayuk on the other team. I don't know about that.
I don't either. I don't either. And I don't think that's the Chiefs are going to be looking to, hey, let's trade assets away and then pay a guy, you know, big money like that and deal with that. I don't feel like that's their type of move, but something's going to have to be done, to your point. Something. Whether one of those veteran guys, right, that they feel most comfortable with the price and where they are at physically, or, you know, the draft. But I would think that they are looking to bolster that wide receiver room a little bit there.
You know, we had no idea that Tyreek Hill was going to be traded until the day that he got traded. Is it crazy to wonder whether or not he'd kind of like to go back? Is it crazy to wonder that after 2 years of dealing with him, the Dolphins would be like, yeah, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if he went back?
I don't know. I don't know. But the one thing is, I'm sure he's looking at it going, damn, I mean, I like Miami. I'm from Miami. It's awesome. I'm having fun. But damn, the Chiefs are good. Like, oh, my, man, I'd have 2 more rings, right? He'd have 2 more rings. He'd probably be now more in the conversation for, like, greatest receiver in the history of the NFL. Those are the what-ifs that I think will bother Tyreek Hill. But damn, I don't see that happening. Mike McDaniel, that offense, it's all about Tyreek Hill. I mean, that's the awesomeness of it. He took the Tyreek Hill motion and the way he's used to a whole nother level, even from where Kansas City had had it. And it's a big part of the success of their offense. So I don't think they're ready to disabandon that yet, or abandon that, I should
well,
say.
Well, disabandon. Oh, nope. Yeah, it's just like checkers.
It's double. It
Once
was a double.
Word is done.
It's really
I
abandoned.
I kind of like disabandon.
It's really
abandoned. I like
disabandon.
Disband, abandon, disabandon. I like it. By the way, there are conflicting reports out there about the lawsuit that has already been filed against Rashee Rice for the crash that happened late last month. Some headlines, he's been sued for $1 million. Other headlines, $10 million. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, what a jury gives the plaintiff is all that matters. There are certain numbers you have to put in to get past the jurisdictional minimum so you're not in small claims court. There's certain magic words you have to put in the civil complaint. That number is there mainly for media consumption to get attention. And it's just weird. I see $1 million in some places. I see $10 million in others. Somebody either added a zero or somebody missed a zero. It doesn't matter. It'll be driven by the actual medical bills. It'll be driven by the pain and suffering that the plaintiffs experienced, and their lawyers and the plaintiffs themselves will hope that there'll be some sort of a sense of outrage over the recklessness of the accident that will cause the jury to give more than they otherwise would give simply to compensate. And there'll surely be a claim for punitive damages because this borders on willful, intentional, grossly negligent, reckless, et cetera, the kind of thing that could unlock an award of punitive damages. So it doesn't matter. Here's your continuing legal education, or just flat out legal education if you've never had any whatsoever. The number in a lawsuit does not matter. What matters is the number on the piece of paper when the jury comes back.
Okay, that's good. I didn't really know how that kind of went down either. So that's actually a good little tidbit for a guy like me. But either way, yeah, someone are coming.
Yeah, for future reference.
For future reference.
No, hopefully
not
you're not living
myself,
that at any point.
Listen, he's in a mess, and this is a mess for the Chiefs and a mess for Rashee Rice, whose career was just starting to flourish, and we're starting to go, oh, wow. He looks like he could be something special here. This is going to, you know, derail things a little bit.
It's been more than 16 years since I last experienced this. And I don't know, during my practice, 15, 20 trials, I don't know. But when you hear that knock on the door when the jury's got their verdict, I mean, everything on the inside is looking for a way to get to the outside. I mean, the whole, just until it's done, it is a horrible feeling, and it starts when you hear that knock. So anyway, another reason why I'm very grateful, even though I have to deal with you 4 days a week, 2 hours a day, it is still better than the stress and the strain of practicing law and having to try cases and just sweat out every single verdict, because you never know. You never know. Anybody who thinks they know, you know, if you haven't noticed, there's a high profile trial that's happening right now, and you got people pontificating about this, that, or everything. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Anybody who tells you they know what's going to happen in the outcome of a jury trial is either stupid or lying, because nobody ever knows what a jury's going to do. All right, let's take a break. When we return, Daniel Jones isn't concerned about the Giants drafting his replacement. Should he be? We'll discuss that next here on PFT. Kirk Cousins already saying some Kirk Cousins things in Atlanta. Well, that certainly didn't take long. Third week with the Falcons, and a teammate says to me in the lunch line, "I feel like you give off serious dad vibes, Kirk." So...
duh.
Comedy is hard. Proving yet again, comedy is hard.
Yeah, I mean, he's been giving off dad vibes for 5 years. What's he talking about? He just realizing this now? I mean, he's ultimate dad vibe type of guy. But it is funny. I tell people all the time, it actually came up recently in a few times this weekend where, you know, I've told you before, when you're 30 years old in an NFL locker room, it is crazy how life changes. You're 30 years old in the NFL locker room. You start to walk through the door in the morning and people start to call you old man. And you're like, what? Right? You've been taught your whole life. 30's young. 30's great. Blah, blah, blah. But in football world, you're old. And it is quite a culture shock sometimes with a bunch of 22 and 23-year-olds around you and you're in your mid-30s.
And I'm sure from your perspective, when you are the one who is giving off the dad vibes, like this just like happened quickly. Like, how did this occur? And think about it. If Tom Brady would waltz back into a locker room at age 47.
Yeah, they're going to be like, you're giving off grandpa guys, vibes.
Yes.
Seriously.
So the Vikings looking to replace Kirk Cousins, who, if you have been, you know, not paying attention to football for the last 5 weeks, you didn't know that Cousins is now with the Falcons. The Vikings looking at incoming quarterbacks, the thinking Kevin O'Connell can turn anyone into a great quarterback because he kind of had to do it 3 or 4 different ways last year. Here he is talking about their meetings with the guys who will be drafted coming up in 9 or 10 days.
And every single time you get a chance to be around some of these guys, you get excited about possibilities and potential. But it is the draft, and we're not the only team that, you know, may want to select one of these guys. So we're working through making sure we know the landscape of the whole class at that position as we are, you know, many, many positions. We just happen to have a really good situation, in my opinion, with the players we have in that huddle, the guys that are going to be coaching that player, and then ultimately what we hope is a long-term plan to try to have a really special player at the position.
Yeah, look, I think part of where...
Is he talking like they're definitely going to take a quarterback there almost. I mean, he's almost...
Well, and the only way they wouldn't take one is if 6 go before they're on the clock at number 11. That's the only way they're not taking one, right? If any of the 6 are there, and I think this is where the Vikings are probably, to O'Connell's dismay, confident that whoever they get, O'Connell's going to turn him into a great quarterback. Whoever we get, we trade up, we get J.J. McCarthy or Drake May or whoever, he'll turn him into a great quarterback. We sit tight and Michael Penix falls to us, he'll turn him into a great quarterback. We'll be fine. And, you know, if there's no one left at number 11, then the question becomes, when do they pull the trigger on a guy in round 2, round 3, round 4 that O'Connell would turn into a potentially great quarterback, or call Tom Brady at that point. And O'Connell actually played with Brady in New England, is younger than Brady by several years. But yeah, I think that they the moment, it's just like the Bills trading Stephon Diggs. The moment that Cousins left, we knew the Vikings were in the market for a quarterback in round 1. But the end of that same week, they picked up the 23rd overall pick, not to use it, to package it if they can to move up. So
I mean, yeah. Right.
I think they're confident whoever they get. I'm serious. And I've said this before, if I'm one of the incoming quarterbacks, he's the guy I want to play with because he's going to take me and get me to my ceiling, whatever my ceiling is.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you there. Right. You know, I mean, you know my thoughts on the quarterback situation. Right. I mean, if I have my choice behind Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, I would certainly rather have Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, or Michael Penix over Drake May, right? The situation, and, you know, there's a lot of people that link Drake May with Minnesota, right? There's people that think that they're hot on him. You know, I get that. And I think to your point, it's like, oh, wait, he's got some issues, but hey, it's O'Connell. He's awesome with quarterbacks, right? He maybe doesn't have to play right away. We can play Sam Darnold and play him. So that's where it's going to be interesting. The Drake May part of the conversation is really, I think the joker, the jack of all trades here in this whole thing. I think a lot of teams, from what I know, the top 5 in my list, right, people are comfortable with them. Drake May is the one I get a sense that's all over the place, right? We know there's a few teams that like him. I know there's a bunch of other teams that are like, what, the top 10 pick? There's no way I would do that for Drake May. So where is that going to go, right? And that to me is going to be the interesting thing. But, yeah, I would think by all due accounts, hey, sitting there 5, 6, 7, 8, right, some of these guys are gone already. That's when we see Minnesota maybe make a play to move up a little bit to make sure they get one of them. And who that is, I don't know, but I'm kind of like you, expecting that to happen.
Well, we know that the Bears are going quarterback. We know that the Commanders are going quarterback. We know that the Patriots likely, if they don't trade that spot, will go quarterback at 3. Then you've got the Cardinals and the Chargers, assuming they don't trade out, not quarterback there or there. Then you got the Giants at 6. And let's listen to Daniel Jones. I'll share my views after we hear from Daniel Jones on the possibility of the Giants putting a quarterback's name on the card at number 6.
you know, the nature of our business. It's a competitive league, so you know, the best way to handle that, I think, is to focus on what I'm doing, focus on myself, and making sure that I'm, you know, one, healthy, and then ready to play good football. So you know, that's what I can control. That's what I can do to help myself and the team.
If you're healthy, you know, this summer in training camp, which you hope to be, and going on into the season, you feel you're the best quarterback that the Giants can have to start their season with?
I do, yes.
What else is he going to say? I mean, look at that smile. Like, yeah, what am I going to say? No, no. They could do better than me. They could throw a rock and do better than me.
You're right.
I mean, look, here's the difference between the Giants and the other teams looking for quarterbacks. And let's stipulate, and I think you'll agree with me, Bears, Commanders, Patriots, Giants, Vikings, Raiders, Broncos. 13 top picks, 7 teams looking. The Giants have a guy on his second contract. The Giants have a guy that they decided a year ago was the guy. So, I mean, that's what separates them. That's what makes it more difficult.
Right.
And if you're Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, or Brian Daboll, the head coach, do you want a guy that's going to be parked for a year behind Jones and maybe even behind Drew Locke, or do you want a difference maker? We talked about Giants draft needs not that long ago.
Right.
The cupboard is freaking bare.
There's not one offensive player, right? We talked about it. Well, offensive player that can make a play and make something happen. That's what we said, right?
And, you know, if anything, now the problem is the Cardinals, if they take Marvin Harrison Jr., the Chargers take, I don't know, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunes. I mean, they at least get one of the top three receivers.
Yeah.
At number 6.
Right.
Assuming that the Cardinals and the Chargers stay put and draft receivers. But it, to me, that's what would make more sense than throwing Daniel Jones overboard now, especially since you're probably going to be at best getting the 4th quarterback off the list.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I think you're right that it probably would look like you're going to get the 4th quarterback. Now, you know, how you have those quarterback graded, that would be one thing to talk about. You hit on the other right point, right? They need a guy that makes a difference, right? And by all due accounts, right? And I'm expecting Monty Osfort and the Cardinals, right? And Monty being from New England and needing a safe pick. I expect them to go Marvin Harrison Jr. I think the Chargers, if they stay put, I don't think Jim Harbaugh seems like a wide receiver at number 5 type of guy. I would think it might go offensive line or something more about the physicality of the football team. Maybe they tried to trade down. The Giants, by all due accounts, could have Malik Nabers there, who, as you've heard me say, I think is phenomenal. I mean, special type of receiver. And I know this for a fact, that there's a lot of teams in football that have Malik Nabers as the number 1 receiver in the draft. I would bet you that there's more teams in the draft in the first round that have Malik Nabers as a higher grade than Marvin Harrison Jr. That would be my assessment. Not that I've talked to all 32 teams, but you know, I talked to and texted with a lot of people, and that's certainly some of the feedback I got there. But it'll be interesting. I don't feel like the Giants drafting a quarterback, I feel like, would be almost career suicide to a degree for Daboll and Joe Shane. Right? I do. I mean, it's year 3. It's a big year. We're going to add more distractions and problems to the situation and not fill, you know, voids and needs, right, for the football team right now. I know there's the political play that you bring up that's very real of like, hey, we draft a quarterback, we can get another year and do that. But I don't think that's guaranteed in this current environment.
Didn't help them after they drafted Jones.
Exactly right. I was going to say, ask Matt Nagy about that with Justin Fields. Tell him how that went. Call him up. Matt Nagy on line 9. Oh, yep, I did that. I'm fired and I'm on the Chiefs now. So that's where I just doesn't seem like a Giants type of move. But again, I've been wrong before. I've been shocked before. And I'm very intrigued about what they're going to do at 6.
I think the more realistic outcome would be the Giants being the potential spot where.
Is that why they're saying it, right? That I just crossed my mind. Are they saying all this, or are they letting rumors out because they know, damn, the Raiders, the Broncos, they want a quarterback. We might have to trade with the Giants or get in front of the Giants or whatever else to get a guy.
I mean, because you got right. The Vikings, the Broncos, and the Raiders lined up. Boom, 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 11, 12, 13. So that's sixth spot. If the Cardinals don't trade, if the Chargers don't trade, then the Giants become the focal point. And, hey, we're thinking about taking a quarterback. Now, you know, see, that's a reason to not do a deal with the Cardinals or the Chargers, because we know you're not going to take a quarterback. So nobody's going to do a deal with you. Go ahead and take your receiver. We'll worry about quarterback later. Then here come the Giants. Hey, you know, we're thinking about a quarterback here. That may be a greater impetus for Vikings, Broncos, Raiders to call the ball and move up. So that may be what they're trying to set up. You've talked about that before,
yes,
and I think
we're
on to something there.
Yeah, I feel like the Giants and New England are dangling that out as a possibility. Now, we'll see where that goes. But, you know, the more and we get closer here, the more I feel like we know Caleb Williams won, and I'm starting to feel like it's Jaden Daniels 2 to Washington, period. And now we'll see. That's where the draft will get interesting. And that's where I do believe, you know, we're going to start to see some fireworks and some action and some calls made that can make the first round a lot of fun.
One last thing about Jones before we take a break.
Yeah.
And I was reluctant to even mention this, but, like, some of the bot accounts on Twitter that cover football were acting like his press conference yesterday, like there was something wrong with him.
Because of his eyes being wide and being like that?
Yeah, I didn't.
He's always been like that. He's always been a little bit googly-eyed and like that when I ever see him, right? That's what he is. I didn't think it was any different look. I know what people are referring to.
They're just desperate to take anything and turn it into something that will trend. Desperate.
He's a guy that people like to tear
twist
down.
The dumbest shit
right.
to turn it into something that will trend. They'll take your words out of context. They'll put meaning to something that isn't there. They'll do anything they can to make it trend on Twitter. It really is. It's a sad state of affairs.
Well, Twitter will pay them, right? They'll pay them now, right? Or something like that. Isn't that kind of how it goes down? I think it
pays
does.
Pays for engagement. Let me tell you something. I'm waiting for, hey, Elon, where's my check? I haven't gotten a check. We got a shitload of followers, and I don't get a check for engagement, and I don't even think about that. The only thing I think about is pulling the plug on our Twitter account, frankly. That's all I think about. All right, let's take a break.
I just want them to fix some of the glitches on my Tesla. That's all I want. That's all I'm asking. I thought you were a car guy. My damn Falcon door doesn't go down the right way. That's what I would like to do. Like, stick to what we're good at, okay?
Rich people problems. Rich people problems. All right, you probably learned about the Stephon Diggs trade before C.J. Stroud did. We'll tell you more about that next here on PFT Live.
How did you first find out about the Stephon Diggs trade?
I found out I was actually asleep. I was in the West Coast. I've been back home in L.A., so I was knocked out. And I keep my phone on do not stir. I get a lot of phone calls. and so I didn't really know. And I woke up, and my boy Chase B texted me. He's like, "How you feeling, bro?" And I'm good, fam. How are you? And so, like, and then I had sent, like, 5 texts like that. And then I woke up for real. This house kind of like halfway texting in the bed. Woke up, brushed my teeth, washed my face, you know. And then I seen the news, and I seen it on, like, Instagram. I'm like, oh, shoot, that's what they talking about.
C.J. Stroud asleep when Stephon Diggs becomes a member of the Houston Texans. He had to be thrilled with that. I mean, look, this is a team in Texas that is truly going all in. One is saying that it's going all in, but not doing anything. The other one is saying nothing and just doing what is necessary. First team ever, as we've mentioned before, but it bears repeating, to acquire in the same offseason a 1,000-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard receiver, and a guy who had 10 or more sacks. First time that's ever happened that those three join a team at the same time. And this is a Texans team that got to the final eight, that gave the Ravens everything they could handle for a half. It wasn't until the third quarter, that drive, and after Lamar Jackson used some bad words, as he said in the locker room, that the Ravens pulled away in that game. So the Texans are in great position to compete with the best of the best in the AFC, and they've added more, and Stephon Diggs now joining C.J. Stroud makes for a team that I'm very interested to see what they can do this year, Chris.
I mean, expectations were kind of high with the way the year ended last year. I mean, we looked at them and went, well, I mean, playoff team. you know, CJ Stroud, wow, they're going to be good for a long time. But then when you talk about the additions, especially Danielle Hunter and Stephon Diggs, you go from, hey, winner of the AFC South playoff type of team to like, no, they're going for the Super Bowl. This is they've injected themselves into Super Bowl contender. They've gone to a different stratosphere over the last month of how we viewed them as a football team. You couple that quarterback with the guys you just talked about, also a very good free agency and a good base meat and potatoes of the team already. Yeah, damn. I mean, the Texans definitely got very, very high expectations from everybody now, and especially with that guy at quarterback.
And the powers that be in the National Football League have to love this, because it shows that any team can go from being the most dysfunctional in all of the league, which the Texans were not that long ago under the Jack Easterby reign in Houston. He's gone. D'Amico Ryans is in. C.J. Stroud ends up being great, and here they are.
We're in the era.
To compete for a potential Super Bowl victory. Here's D'Amico Ryans, head coach of the Houston Texans, on how they go from being the hunters to being clearly in 2024 the hunted.
I appreciate the question, but we're always hunting. That doesn't change for us. We're always hunting. Expectations on the outside, whatever that may be, it really doesn't change who we are, right? It doesn't. The expectations from outside don't permeate inside our building, and now we have to change what we're doing just because of outside expectations. It really doesn't matter. We don't care about expectations. Talk doesn't win games. We have to go out and play good football when that time comes.
That's right. That's what you expect them to say. But the reality is, Chris, the expectations have changed, and it's going to be for him to process that, to get his players to not get a big head, to not rest on their laurels from last year, to not think any of it transfers. Remember, Bill Belichick always said, none of it that we did before matters. Nothing ever matters. You're back to 0-0 with everyone else, and you're now a measuring stick. You're now a team that is going to get circled on the schedule, and they're not going to get into the rhythm that every coach would love to have. 1 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Eastern. No, they're going to be all over the place. Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night, Saturdays, maybe Thanksgiving. I still want Texans at Cowboys in the 4:30 p.m. Eastern game on Thanksgiving. They are going to be a hot commodity this year. That's part of the price you pay for being a great team. So this is going to be even more of a challenge, different, but even more of a challenge for D'Amico Ryans to get these guys pointed in the right direction, because there is going to be some of that trickle in that, hey, we're pretty good. And they're going to set themselves up for some humble pie early if they don't come out and deliver. I think they will, but it's on Ryans to get them ready to do it.
Yeah, it is. Now, you know, he's got that in him, right? It's that, you know, 49ers way, right, that we've seen there. It's run through brick walls, intensity, hustle, all of that, right? You know, a little bit of the all gas, no brakes type of mantra from Saleh. I have no doubt that D'Amico Ryans can keep that type of energy with the Houston Texans going. Yeah, they're going to be a little more hunted or whatever else. Certainly, we know the expectations. You mentioned it, right? They're going to be more on national TV. The quarterback's a superstar, right? We're in this era of like young quarterbacks who totally change around how we look at a certain organization. I mean, it's really pretty special what some of these guys are doing right now and overcoming dysfunction or changing the way we look at it. But here's where I think they won't have a problem. The reason they don't have a problem is a little bit because the conference they're in is the first thing. And they're going to look at it and go, hey, yeah, we're good. We're good. There's no doubt. But, I mean, you know, to your point, what you said, we got our butts whooped in the third and fourth quarter against the Baltimore Ravens. Are we that good? Right? The Chiefs went to Baltimore and whooped Baltimore. Right? So we got some work to do here. And Joe Burrow's going to be back healthy next year with the Cincinnati Bengals. We better be on our game. Right? So that, to me, will be the thing they can look at least to go, hey, it's the AFC. It ain't easy. The Dolphins are still there. Josh Allen's still there. We got work to do. And hopefully they can keep that intensity and drive that they need there. And really, I don't doubt they can, because I just know that kind of energy that D'Amico Ryan brings on a day-to-day basis.
Well, and look, it's easy for D'Amico Ryans to say we're continuing to be the hunters because they have the Ravens, the Bills, the Dolphins, the Lions, in addition to their usual in-division opponents. They've got the Cowboys, the Packers, the Vikings, the Chiefs. They go to Kansas City. So they've got plenty of opportunities to show that they can play with a better team. They won't be favored in every game this year. There's going to be plenty of games when they're the underdog, so that plays into this idea that they still have work to do to be truly regarded as a team that has arrived, but they've done a lot of work to be regarded as a team that has arrived. When we return, Vikings tight end TJ Hockenson with some thoughts on the low hit that tore his ACL late in the 2023 season. That's next here on PFT Live. This is week 16, Minnesota Vikings at home against the Lions. TJ Hockenson, one of the most reliable targets all year long, ever since he got to Minnesota, takes a low hit from Kirby Joseph, tears the ACL late in the regular season, has the full offseason to recover from it. Here is Hockenson, first day of the offseason program, talking about the low hit from Kirby Joseph that blew out his ACL.
Obviously, you know, I wasn't too happy about it. I got nothing against him. I played with him in Detroit, and I understand, you know, that's kind of what they expect you to do in the league. But on the same hand, I would have much rather gone down with a concussion for 2 weeks than have to go through this for 9 months. You can't cut outside the tackle box, so it doesn't really make sense why these guys are able to go as low as they are when you're 25 yards downfield, looking back at the quarterback, looking, and you don't have any awareness. I'm looking at the light of that and hoping that's not what the intent was, to injure a player in that sense. But, you know, I think that to have it happen a couple weeks later, I think that's something that, you know, the league needs to look at and just see what we can do.
A couple weeks later, he's referring to Tyler Higbee, the Rams,
yeah,
a low hit
playoffs game,
right? Kirby Joseph,
Stafford yelled at him
as well.
Stafford yelled at him. Remember, that was part of it, right? Because we were just talking in break about this and saying, no, the reason Stafford yelled was because they saw on film what Kirby Joseph did to T.J. Hockenson, and they, you know, by all due accounts, kind of seemed like they were calling him dirty on the field during the wild card game.
And any time a player speaks like that, anti-social media pounces. Just play flag football. Just play two-hand touch. Suck it up. Be tough. Look, what are you supposed to do there? I mean, if you're protected in a defenseless posture from a hit to the head or neck area, why should you not be protected against having your knees taken out when you are in a defenseless posture? I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. The strike zone from, you know, the thigh to below the shoulder.
Right.
And I remember Rich McKay and I having this conversation years ago, the whole idea that football has big guys and small guys. And one way the small guys get the big guys onto the ground is hit them low. And there was a resistance to changing the rules to take away the ability of little guy to get big guy on the ground by hitting him low. But what has gone on the last 15 years? And this was a result of defensive players basically saying, you guys don't care about us. All you care about is concussions to offensive players. You don't care about our knees getting taken out. And they have expanded the rules to prohibit low hits. I remember the first time blocks below the waist were taken away. It was back in the 70s on kick returns, if you remember that. You weren't alive. But that was like, and I was like, why is that? Again, they're trying to find ways to take massive potential for injury out of the game. And you can't tell me there isn't a massive potential for injury when you got a guy running down the seam, looking back to catch the ball, and he's got to worry about a missile coming in head first into his knees. So it's a simple fix. It will still be football, and it's the next step in an evolution that I thought would have happened by now.
Yeah.
That there'd be a strike zone on the defenseless receiver until he's able to become a runner, a ball carrier who can, in theory, avoid that low hit, although sometimes you can't. At least you have a chance to try to avoid it.
Yeah, it's the weird one with Hockenson because he did take three steps, right? Where we see a lot of guys usually be able to get their feet out of the ground in that type of scenario there. But, like, either way, I think his point is real. I think what you're saying is the right thing, too. I do. I mean, again, for all those people who are out there, oh, whatever, the game's soft. Oh, I want to go first. I mean, you probably didn't play football, right? And you certainly haven't been on an NFL field to see how big and fast the game is and how small the field is. It'd be eye-popping to people if they saw it, right? It usually is when they do. Like, holy crap, I can't believe these guys are doing this to each other out there. Second of all, to those people that are out there, the mouth breathers of the world, I'd go, wouldn't you rather see the guy just get actually crushed in the chest? I think that's more fun anyways. Like, what? I think those are the ones that are the cool highlight, catch the ball, get crushed like that. Those are more fun to watch than some guy's legs falling in the air, right? And for all those mouth breathers that, oh, they might as well do that, it ain't tough to hit somebody in the knees or the ankles. So I would say, man up. Let's hit them in the chest, all you Twitter mouth breathers up there. Man up, okay? So that's where I don't like that crap talk. But either way, it needs to be done. I think Hockenson's points are real, right? It's like, yes, we want to make the game safer. We don't want to end careers. And we've helped the defense out in that way, whether it's chop blocks or, wait, you're being blocked and engaged and pass protecting. No one can come and hit you and do that anymore, right? And we've seen the players can adjust to the hitting, the strike zone, and all that. I hope they do make this change. You know, as we've heard from years, right? Back to Larry Fitzgerald when this thing first came a problem. Yep. He was the first one that said it, right? I'll pay your fine. Hit me in the head. I'll take a concussion. I don't want an ACL to where I'm never the same the rest of my career with running and feeling explosive because I've had a knee that's severely damaged.
Yeah, and that was exactly my next point. He's the first one who made that an obvious talking point. I'd rather take a concussion than have my knee torn up. But here's the thing. Parents were steering their kids away from football, not because of the possibility they were going to get a torn ACL when they were adults, but because of the possibility they were going to get a concussion when they were kids. So the NFL prioritized head safety, ignored ACL safety, and still to this day is allowing those hits on players in a defenseless posture after they've caught a pass. So that's something I'm surprised the NFL didn't deal with it, especially after we saw it happen twice near the end of the season. I'm surprised that didn't become something that made its way onto the agenda for the league meetings in March.
Maybe, well, as protective as they are of defenseless receivers, you would think, wait, like, the guy's defenseless and we're breaking his leg? That's just going to be like, well, that was a play of football. Like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, flags aren't even thrown on that. I mean, especially the second one with Higbee. I mean, again, I know it's supposed to be head or nickel. He ruined his career. I mean, he's not going to be able to play and be the same this year to start the year. Whether he'll be the same or totally explosive himself, we'll see. And that's where, same with what we talked about, you know, with the hip drop tackle. We want to see it because we want players protected so they can maximize their careers and play the right way. And I think that's the most important thing.
It is a grueling 9-month rehab where it is all you are doing to get that knee back to what it used to be. It is a full commitment. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it takes more than a full football season to get you back to where you were, but it dramatically alters the trajectory of your career, both Hockenson and Higbee dealing with that. Let's take a break. In honor of John Sterling, the voice of the Yankees, retiring, we're going to do a draft of the most iconic NFL voices next here on PFT Live.
3-1 to Posada. Pitch. Swung on and hit in the air to deep right. That ball's high. It is far. It is gone. Bottom of the ninth, two out, two run, walk-off home run for Posada. Georgie Juice one. He hits a two-run home run to elevate the Yankees from a 13-12 loss to a 14-13 win. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win!
That's May of 2006, John Sterling, the legend, retiring effective immediately. He said in his statement, "I'm a very blessed human being. I've been able to do what I wanted, broadcasting for 64 years. As a little boy growing up in New York, as a Yankees fan, I was able to broadcast the Yankees for 36 years. It's all to my benefit, and I leave very, very happy. I look forward to seeing everyone again on Saturday." That is when they will have a tribute for John Sterling, who is in his 80s and has been doing it forever.
Legend.
And you're the Yankees fan.
Yeah.
I assume you've listened to his calls a lot more than I have. And I just remember, you know, there's just something magical about, especially baseball.
Yeah.
You have that. There's so many games.
Right.
That's the voice.
Yeah.
You listen on the radio. Bob Prince was the guy growing up as a Pirates fan. You just, you feel like you know that person.
Exactly. It's just, it's part of a, you know, oh, hey, we're driving the Yankees game on. Oh, there's John Sterling. It's just, it's comfort zone. It's soothing, right? It's the Yanks. It's a part of the tradition here in New York, and John Sterling's been a huge part of it. I mean, legend, really. And all his sayings. He has so many fun sayings. You heard one or two there with the Jorge Posada home run, but I mean, he was big enough deal to where the Yankees would win a game. He would say something cool at the end when somebody hit a homer or whatever, to where the next day people be like, hey, did you hear what Sterling said last night? That was a new one, blah, blah, blah. He really was a thing within the thing, and sad to see him go. True legend of the sport.
Okay, so our draft today, the most iconic NFL voices inspired by the retirement of John Sterling. Quick trivia question. Chris, Pete, you're blocking the words here. What team has the longest tenured NFL play-by-play radio voice?
Gosh, I feel like I should know this. I've been looking at the teams because I did see this during the commercial break, and I never cheat. And I don't know this, but I'm just going to go with guy that I know that's really old that announces games for a team, and that would be Brett Musburger in Las Vegas.
He doesn't currently announce for a team, though.
No, he doesn't do Raiders right now, so he's done. Damn, so I missed that. I don't know that. I'm off. Oh,
Merrill Reese.
I should have known that too. Damn it, just didn't. Gosh, Merrill Reese, yes, legend. Gosh.
All right, I get the first pick. Okay. I get the. I'm not gonna go. I am going to go John Facenda. I was going to leave John Facenda for you. You already told me it was going to be Facenda. How can it not be Facenda?
Right.
How can it not be? The gravelly voice fueled by all those years of chain-smoking, unfiltered Camels. It has a benefit when you're in that booth. His voice was football. It is football. It was what indoctrinated me with NFL films in the early 70s. It literally felt like and sounded like the voice of God.
The cold wind is a frozen. He's the best. I can't even do it. I can't do it justice.
I was wondering what words you were.
Well,
gonna,
I know. I was gonna say. I think I had like three sayings of his all mixed up in my head, and I was like, I'm about to embarrass this.
Dung. I thought you were gonna say.
but I mean nothing. It gives me chills to this day. Always did as a kid. I mean, when he would come on and talk about the Raiders, the cold wind. What is it? Autumn, whatever, something like that. All right. I mean, John Madden, I'm going with next. I'm going with John Madden. I mean, boom, bam, boom. You know, I mean, like all those noises and grunts and, you know, I don't even know, you know, just messing up words as he talked about football. Yeah.
I can see why you would like it.
I do. He's my kind of guy. He just goes right off the cuff.
We got to take a break.
I like it.
We're going to jam in the rest of the draft right after this. All right, most iconic voices in NFL history. Next one for me is Pat Summerall. Kind of like John Facenda, chain-smoking the cigarettes gave him that permanent deep voice, but he was the voice of every big game that was ever played when I was growing up.
I hear you. I mean, and then made the game so simple. I mean, it would just be like, Montana, Rice, touchdown. And you were like, damn, that said it all. I don't need to say anything more. Like, we can see the rest. So, yeah, I'm with you there. He might have been my next pick if you didn't take him. But I think I'll go with Howard Cosell. You're looking live here at Howard Cosell for Monday Night Football with, you know, Don Meredith, the dandy Don, blah, blah, blah. I got to go with Howard. I mean, he's one of the iconic voices of the history of the NFL.
I didn't know whether you'd take Howard because it's almost before your time.
It is before my time, but I'm a historian, as you know.
Howard Cosell and Don Meredith. You go Cosell, I'll go Meredith, because together it was a great chemistry. Meredith would always sing, turn out the lights, the party's over.
Yep, amazing.
At the right moment, when the game was over. I doubt that he ever got burned by prematurely singing, turn out the lights, the party's over. But that was a great time.
That was a good one.
I don't know. I feel like for a long time, networks were trying to recreate that.
Yeah.
And then they eventually realized, maybe after the failed Dennis Miller experiment, there's no point even trying. It's never
going to
happen.
Can I make my own pick, or are you going to talk about it for like forever here?
Oh, I mean,
yeah, that's the last time you get the first pick.
Make one.
I'm going with Chris Berman. How about that? Bumbling, Bumbaruski, Bumbalaya.
See you tomorrow. Turn out the. I forgot you had a pick.